so that this is like pretty abstract and there's not really that much content in that statement. So I kind of, you have to explain all the different parts of this mapping kind of, well, let me explain like how this mapping was kind of like conceived and like discovered and what it means. So so I guess in the late 80s or the early 90s, I can't remember. So there was this, so Turiya, Vero, Barrett, Westbury. So they constructed a 2+1 D state sum. State sum model from a fusion category. So Turiya and Vero did kind of the quantum group case, but then it was realized, I guess, like Barrett and Westbrook having a spherical fusion category or something like that. That's kind of like I think that's kind of the first time, like obviously topological quantum field theory was around in the 80s, but I think this was kind of the first time that it really started, it was like kind of started interacting with like the fusion category stuff. Okay, so so later, so I guess I'm kind of lumped together two things, but then in hindsight, they're kind of very similar. So Kataev, Levin, and Wen. So they defined explicit lattice models. So they defined explicit lattice models that realize like this same effects. So. That realize this kind of Turiya Vero, like this that realize this mapping. Can everyone see this? Especially small children over that side. So I think so there's kind of two things here, right? Kataev had this quantum double kind of like error correction in with Anion's paper where he kind of defined a lattice model for every finite group. And then later in the 2000s, Levin and Wen defined what people call the Levin-Wen lattice model, which is a lattice model defined for any fusion category. And so in particular, there's G-graded vector spaces is a fusion category, and when you stick that into the Levin-Wen model, you get exactly the Kataev model. So there were these two kind of descriptions of the same kind of quantum field theory, and then also like kind of concurrently with this, which right over here. So Ken Walker, he described how to construct a fully extended 2+1 the TQFT computation. And there's been like a lot of other people who have worked on this, but I think Kim Walker was the first person to kind of do this. Part of the reason I would say Kim Walker is kind of was the first person to do this, because it's like really hard to actually define what a fully extended TQFT is. And Kevin kind of came up with some definition and then kind of the fusion category fits into, you can construct, you know, an example of his definition using a fusion category. But it's like, I mean, it's a story that hasn't fully been like worked out yet. I think they're still working on that. Okay, so yeah, so the point is that like there's a kind of bunch of papers that explain that you can kind of get like a topological quantum computing category, and then there's like also like stuff that seems a lot harder to me. There's like this taking the proof of the Bergwaldism hypothesis and stuff like this, where he which gives kind of like a more general explanation for why you should expect like a fusion category to give quantum field theory, but I don't really know anything about that. So, okay, so then there's this other thing which is like kind of a big, I'm just like kind of explaining like where my perspective on this stuff comes from, because there's lots of different ways to think about this picture. Okay, so then there's this other paper which I think is probably the most important one for me at least. So this is Kataev and Kong. So they kind of, what they explained was that if you have a phi module between two fusion categories, then this gives you a domain walk between the phases. And so they have a paper where they work in this Levin-Wern framework, and they kind of explain how you can construct the boundary Hamiltonian terms from. So they actually only work with one sided modules. So they say a module like a one sided module, and that gives you a boundary to vacuum. But essentially what they do is they kind of demonstrate that modules over fusion categories correspond to domain walks between phases in some sense. Okay. And so this is kind of the context that like I think about this stuff in, is most of these four kind of historical points, I guess. Okay, and so then what I'm gonna tell you about today is two things. Two questions. I'm gonna tell you the answers. So the first one is can Walker's description of the TQFT I just say the TQFT. When I say the, I mean it's like from the fusion category. The TQFT be extended to include like domain walls and defects and like stuff like that. Can be extended to include defects. And so I think like Kevin has known for a long time the answer to this is yes. And they're actually writing a paper about it. So Kevin and Scott Morrison, they're writing a paper which hasn't come out yet, and it's called, they've told me it's called Algebraic Completions of High Categories. So I have no idea what's going to be in that paper, but apparently they answer that question in a forthcoming paper. But when I say I want an answer to the question, like, so a lot of people have thought about Walker's construction, and you can actually like really do like lots of computations with it. Like you can essentially compute anything you want about the 2D phase just using Walker's description of the 2 plus 1D TQFT. And so the answer is definitely yes theoretically, but like I guess also, so this is, I would say, the theoretical answer. But like also yes computation. Which is nice, because in the end you want to be able to at least do some computations. I mean, has anyone here like seen, there's this paper that Kevin and Scott wrote about like blob homology? So, yeah. So this construction kind of like appears in that paper in like, one of the chapters, but it's somewhat hard to extract like a usable, like something. It's hard to extract like computational tools from that paper.
Because blockchain is too big.
Yeah, right. They do like, they want to like resolve all of the isotope equations and stuff, but.
There's a rate of construction of answers.
So I should say that like there's this whole field of defect CQFTs. As far as I can tell, a lot of people know that the answer to this is yes, and a lot of people have like proved in different ways that you can do this, but I've never seen any papers. They possibly do exist, but I've never been able to find them. It's like papers that actually like construct a defect EQFT in kind of like this Walker style, where you're kind of drawing pictures on surfaces to a point where you can like actually compute efficiently. Possibly they exist. I just don't know.
Sorry, I wrote that somewhere between.
Right, okay, so there's like Thruckel and Schweiger and like those guys, that German group, they kind of have a bunch of papers on defect EQFTs, but they tend to work with the kind of bundle description of the, they do some diagrammatic stuff, but it's not as computational as like the way that we do it, which will become apparent. So this is the first question, and I think like in some sense I feel like we answered this, but like we really don't deserve credit for this. Like other people have done this, it's just we wanted to do it in such a way that you could like do it on a computer without thought. So the second question right here. So this one is a little bit different. And this one I think the answer, this one, maybe we deserve a bit more, we deserve credit for this. So given numerical data, for a fusion category, for fusion category and some biomolecules. So how do you do physically relevant computations? So there are two things to say here. So the first thing is there's like the subfactor community, especially people like Azumi, have been doing the kinds of computations that we wanted to do for like a really, really long time. So doing kind of fusion category computations is not like it's old business. And in Azumi's approach, they work in exactly right. They work with like number inside of some number field, and also which becomes like a problem, right? I mean, I don't know if anyone here is super familiar with the Zoom Tadra papers, but he ends up having to work in like the following number field. Which ends up being like quite a large number field. And if you actually want to do like, you know, computer computations in this number field, like it just, you can't even do linear algebra in this number field. Really, it's just too big.
So numerical data, you can, like, I just actually write down the matrix, some matrix representative of the F cells.
Yeah. Yeah, and like as floating point numbers.
Yeah. For some fusion category, this is a number field?
For the Hecker.
For some.
For the Hecker.
It feels like this.
Yeah. So this is for the hotter. Azumi kind of he has this series of papers which focus on the hard rock fusion category, where he computes the Drupal God Center and computes heart ratings and all this stuff. But the papers are super involved, and oftentimes it's like kind of unclear. Like a lot of human ingenuity is required. I mean, there's a lot of time where it's not exactly clear how he knew like what to do, what he was doing. Like, I mean, you can implement certain. So Pinhas Grossman has like spent a lot of time kind of implementing this like the Kuntz algebra in his computer. And if you're sitting there and you tell it which order to like do certain operations, you can like kind of reproduce Izumi's calculations. But if you want to create a computer system that just goes from associated data and computes everything, it's like it's really hard to do it with Izumi's way. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I don't think I would be able to do it. Okay, so when did we do this? On Tuesday? Yeah, on Tuesday, so we were just like finishing some code up, and so we can reproduce like I'll say the answer is yes, but like only because we've done like one hard example. So we can reproduce Izumi's computations up to machine error. I think really we were doing up to about like 10 to the negative 16 error or something, but presumably like this is like our first time actually trying this example. Up to machine error in less than 1 second. So what this means is you're taking a numerical solution of you're taking Izumi's associator. So the other thing I should say is that Izumi actually computed the associator of a hard graph, which is like, we're not making any claims about this. That's like, I don't know how to do that. So we took Izumi's solution of the associator equation of hard graph, and then just like took numerical approximations of all the numbers that appear. And then from there, we can just compute the full Drinfeld Center and also like the fusion rules of the Drinfeld Center and the associator for the Drinfeld Center and all this stuff in like really, really quickly, just numerically. So I think the point is that like, so the answer to this is yes, I would say as well. But like, there's still like that. I mean, we still have a lot of stuff that we want to like try out.
Are the modules still known?
Here we're only doing just Hagura. Yeah, but I think the modules are known. Yeah, because it's known, the whole Morita class of Hagura is known. I think there's three fusion categories in a Morita equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
One Morita equivalent. Yeah, so the modules are known. Okay. So I guess like maybe the open question, which a lot of people have obviously tried this before, but like you can build a computer system that will just take in associated data and compute essentially anything that you want about the phase. And then the question is like, can you start like numerically solving the Pentagon equation? Which is hard because it's a cubic equation that's not homogeneous and it's not really clear exactly how to start. So the one thing that is nice is you have Occhiani rigidity, which says that there are a finite number of gauge classes of fusion categories for a fixed fusion ring. And so you would hope that somehow you could leverage that a little bit to like find numerical solutions, but it's not obvious to me.
How are the constraints? How are the constrained equations?
They're very constrained, yeah.
Are they over constrained, right?
Yeah. And so, I mean, a lot of people have thought about, so definitely Scott has thought about this, like trying to solve them over number fields, which is really hard. The dumbest thing you could possibly try would be to like try and do some sort of like gradient descent to find numerical solutions, but it might, I don't know if it actually works. But essentially, I think what yeah, I mean, if you can solve these Pentagon equations numerically, then you can actually like do a lot of these computations just from your numerical data, which is cool.
I guess you also said the product of your other two solutions are equivalent.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, are there simple ways to gauge fix or?
There you can do some stuff. I don't know if you can, like, the way that you do it is going to depend on the fusion ring. Like, whether you can fully gauge fix, it's going to, like, depend on what the fusion ring looks like. But for each fusion ring, you can do a lot of gauge fixing, but it's different.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's kind of like the overview. So, I want to kind of explain like how it works, like how you do it. Okay, so yeah, does anyone have any other questions? Okay, so essentially what I want to do is describe to you like Jacob and myself, like we have our kind of version of the, you know, a defect Kevin Walker TQFT. But and yeah, like as I said before, it's like this isn't new, it's just this version that we've been using is like very, very unusual computation. So I mean, it looks exactly how you would expect it. Like, I don't think anyone's gonna be surprised by what I'm gonna say. Okay, so the definition. So the first thing that we start with. Oh, and so let me also, I'm only going to tell you, I'm just going to say what it looks like for when all the fusion categories are FG. It doesn't get that much more complicated in the general case, but there's like a few like technical details that are annoying to figure out. So mostly related to like rotations of to like the pivotal structure, but FG doesn't really has a very boring pivotal structure, so you can kind of just ignore those. But from the VecG case, it's pretty clear how you would generalize if you know about fusion categories. Okay, so so this is all in this paper. Let me just write it. Like I've done it up. So it's 1907 06692. The two kind of you know, load-bearing definitions in this paper. So we have like so that I'm going to tell you what they are is that there's domain wall structure, and a compound defect. So those are the two things I'm going to define. And then, I mean, the definitions, not super crazy. So it's a domain wall structure. This is the first one. So what does it consist of? It consists of an oriented surface, an oriented surface sigma, and it possibly has boundary. So obviously, the picture to keep in mind is a torus. So these dashed lines, I want you to be thought of as the boundary. So it's an oriented surface. And then we have an embedded one-dimensional oriented manifold, also possibly bound, possibly bound. So this should not be surprising at all. This is exactly the kind of thing that you should expect to see. So D is going to look something like you have just essentially a bunch of arcs inside, because oriented manifolds don't have any trivalent vertices. Okay, so yeah, and the other thing to say is that you want the boundary of D to be contained inside the boundary of sigma. Okay. So and then what else do you have? So I want to label each component of sigma take away D with a finite group. So in the general case, this is going to be you're labeling each component with a fusion category. And then since sigma is oriented, and D is oriented, for each edge in D, there's a notion of left face and right face, right? Like if you're at some point on the line. So for each edge in D, you have a label. So you want left action on F. So GL is the group labeling the left side, and then GR is the group labeling the right side, like that. So you want a set, so like a set with a Y group action. So you want a labeling set like that, and a cohomology class. It's a homology class on the product of the groups, taking values in maps from S to U1. But then this is just isomorphic to the homology of the stabilizer once you choose a point. But it's kind of more useful to think that it's looking in there.
Are you assuming the action on S is transitive?
Yeah. You don't have to, but
sure.
So in this picture over here, in like the bimodule picture, that's just gonna correspond to the bimodule being irreducible. But because you can definitely have non-irreducible bimodules, it's fine.
Just that only makes sense if the action is transitive.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. So the isomorphism?
Yeah.
Generally,
you
get some sort of like
product
in the non-transitive
test.
Just a sum over components. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so this is not only the transitive test, but so B, I mean, this is the thing we really care about. We don't actually care about.
So you switched to like group actions and you warned us that you were going to just do the degraph Wigan case. The bulk phases have trivial associator, or have you just not?
Yeah, the bulk phases have trivial associator. So this is like the simple, like this is the worst, the simplest diagraph Witten model for sure. But I mean, like in the paper, we do like the general fusion category case. I just want to there's still lots of really interesting computations to do in just the normal diagraph, like the untwisted diagraph Witten case, which is why, and the definition's kind of the same. So the bulk of this paper is doing lots of computations to S3. That's like the main thing that we do. You have to see lots of tables of data and stuff. Okay. So this is a domain wall structure, and then so the important point is that I always think of this stuff in terms of like this kind of this part here, these lattice models, because that's how I first learned it.
At the bottom, you put the Riemann conditions.
No, this So I want to imagine, so this doesn't, this doesn't specify a physical system. And essentially the reason is because the boundary is just like left blank.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm just coming a Borgism for now.
Huh?
So it's a Borgism for now, it's not a...
Yeah. So right now I'm just leaving the boundary. Yeah. And so this it doesn't specify a physical system. Unless if there's no boundary, then it does. But when there's boundary, it doesn't. So that's the definition of generic law structure. And like the reason that we go to that is because, I mean, it would probably be more, I mean, you could easily just call this a decorated surface. But the reason that we go to that is because, I mean, the way I first learned all this stuff was from the lattice model perspective, and this really is, I mean, these are domain walls, and we're kind of building this complicated network of domain walls on a surface. So that's why we called it that, and we didn't want to change the name like halfway through. So. Because we wrote four papers. There's a bunch of other papers as well.
Talking about this KTOR code at living with lattice model.
Yeah.
How do you understand this? I mean, physically, sorry for this question.
Yeah.
Suppose you have a domain wall.
Yeah.
Does it create electric or magnetic charge at the boundary? How is
right. So let me just erase this for now. So let's say that we let me answer that question. So you're saying how you match this data up with right. So there are six possible domain walls between Vexemod 2 and Vexemod 2, the 11-1 phases. One of them is the transparent domain wall, and one of them is the EM flip. And then you know that for the Torah code, there's a smooth boundary and a rough boundary with a vacuum. And so you get four more domain walls between Torah code and Torah code. So there are six pieces of data here when both this and this are. And I think a paper we wrote in 2018, we like explained how to match them up. And essentially the way that we do that is by computing. So physically, it's really easy to see what happens when you concatenate domain walls, right? Because like if you take a strip that has rough domain wall, it supports a logical qubit. And if you have rough smooth, it doesn't. And so essentially you can just compute abstractly the tensor. You can compute the tensor products of domain walls. And then we also just compute them mathematically, and then we match the two tables up. So that's how we match the data up with it. But it's also the other thing is that like, I mean, there's this smooth and rough kind of names that come from the Kataya model, but those are not canonically defined because the EM flip swaps them. Right? And that's a symmetry of the model. Yeah. But we wrote a paper where we matched those up.
I think in gauge theory we call them Neumann and Dirichlet.
Sorry?
In gauge theory it would be natural to call them Neumann and Dirichlet boundary conditions. If you use the gauge theory language, you can use boundary conditions as well.
I don't know that language at all, but there definitely lots of people starting to use on that lots of different.
You're not just saying for terminology.
Yeah.
You're using gauge theory terminology.
Okay, so yeah, let me just add in the holes again because So the point is that this doesn't specify a physical system, and I want to explain like how you complete this with a physical system, right? Like I want to essentially fill in the boundary components. And so in the toric code example, this would correspond to like pinning like an E particle and an M particle or something. Okay. I'm just gonna erase.
Just not a board.
Huh?
You've got another board.
Three more boards.
I don't know why. I think I'm just not used to having so many boards. This is very strange. Okay. Okay, so So yeah, essentially what I want to describe, so what I want to talk about is the next thing is we can talk about scan vectors on a domain wall structure. So okay. So essentially what this is like it's kind of exactly what you would expect. So you have so we have the kind of the surface and the domain walls. And then you have what else do you have? So what is a scan vector in this case? So you have a graph sigma, I guess an oriented graph, sigma embedded into gamma embedded into sigma. And the graph is allowed to terminate on the boundary components, and it's allowed to terminate on D. But it's not allowed, like the edges of this graph are not allowed to terminate just in the middle of the surface for no reason. Okay, so then edge labels. So this is just each edge of gamma is labeled with a group value. And so this is exactly the kind of, I mean, this is exactly how Kevin Walters TQFT works in the vector case. Okay, and also, so now imagine, let me just draw some example, like let me just add, kind of decorate this picture a bit more. So we might have edge that goes like this, and maybe some bubbles. So it's kind of just, you know, a bunch of edges like that. And these gamma is allowed to have trigonal vertices. So like that. But it's important that they're all oriented. And so now also notice that we have, like, if the edges terminate on the domain walls, then you want to label the segment, the segments of the domain wall by elements in the labeling set S. Oh, so one thing I forgot to mention is that each such edge is going to live inside some connected component of sigma take away D. And the group label comes from that, the label in that. And so yeah, so the other point, so edge label, so each edge of gamma is labeled with a group element. I'm just going to say edge in one of those pieces. Like, you know, you get more edges from D now, essentially. So each edge of D is labeled with an element of S. So there are vertex conditions. And so in the fusion category case, these are being labeled with objects in fusion categories and objects in biometrics. So and then vertex conditions. So if you look at a vertex which is internal to some face, then it's going to look something like this. And so notice we have an orientation, so we have G1, G2, G3, G4. And so the vertex condition here is saying that you have to have it's saying G1, G2, G3 inverse, G4 has to repeat the 1. And so what you do is you read according to the surface orientation, and if the arrow is going in, you have just the group element, if it's going out, you put an inverse. And so in the fusion category case, you choose like a morphism in the corresponding space. But, okay. Yeah, and so the point is that this equation is independent of where you start. It's just If you start a different place, you get a different element in the conjugacy class, but the conjugacy class of one is one. Okay. And if we take and so there's another vertex condition. If we take a domain wall vertex, it's going to look like this. And then here you just have to do it's just G S equals T, that's the vertex condition. Okay, and then okay, so that's what a scan vector is, but then there's going to be a bunch of local relations for the scan vectors, because as written, this is we have an infinite number of these, right? And so local relations, so there's you can isotope gamma, and then you can flip the orientation on an edge and it inverts the group element, flipping orientations. And then you can also there's reassociating. So does anyone want me to say what the local relations are, or is this the people kind of have some idea of what I mean when I say local relations? Because I can give them an exhaustive list, but
how long is the list?
It has six elements.
It's a lot of drawing.
Oh, there's seven. I'll just wrap them. Okay, so you can isotope gamma, you can flip an orientation, which sends G to G inverse. And then there is if you see this picture, so we have A, B, C, D, A, B, where so if I don't draw an arrow, you should just assume that it's oriented up. B, C, D, like that. And so in a general fusion category, this will get replaced by the associator. But in vec G, there is no associator. So okay, and then bubbles. Again, this would be different. In a general fusion category, unless you have a C star structure, but where you can kind of always assume this kind of thing, but generally there would be some coefficient here. And then there's some for the bimodules. And so we have G1, G2, S is equal to omega. And so if we go back to omega here, right, it takes in two copies of this and S, and spits out a complex number. So I'm just going to use notation and write like this. So really this is a function of five arguments, but I'm just going to use the notation a little bit. So you pick up a phase here from the omega. And then you get the right hand version of this. And then there's the center version, which looks a little bit different. So that looks like, so we have G, H, S, red line. Trying to speak to GHS, and then there's a phase here which is omega or GSH, where I'm just again. So because we want to do computations, you have to actually get all of these conventions consistent and everything, but that kind of thing is really, really boring. So I don't want to waste your time with that kind of thing. Okay, so and then there's two more. There's bubble, you need to have bubble relations for the domain walls as well. So you have to know how to simplify this kind of thing. And so here you also get like a, I guess we call them LG in the paper. So, yes. So and then there's this one on the other side as well. So these are all the relations you need.
So what are the four G's? You have two G left.
Yeah, so you have two on you have two G two things in GL on the left, two things in GR on the right. But you're
where are those in this picture, right?
So this is really a function of five things.
Right.
These are the GLs, and then the GRs would be on the right here. So that picture, their identities. So you have
I see. There's a more general one where you can have.
Yeah. So you don't actually need all of, I mean, this thing is not just a general function, it satisfies some equations. So you only have it.
Right, so these are like H2GL. It's H2GL, how you've written it. Is that right?
Let me just write it up. I just didn't want to. And then this I mean, so one of the kind of annoying parts of this kind of project is like you have to get all of this stuff consistent, but it's really, really boring to get it consistent. It's like not fun, but you can do it.
But it's not necessarily a non-trivial case, like when you restrict to one so that you might be able to gauge your way to one of the sides.
Yeah, and so the point is that So then you can define Z of sigma to be equal to the linear combinations of the scan vectors modulo local relations. And again, like this, I mean, this is not at all new. This is, people have been doing exactly this construction for like more than 20 years. Like, Okay, so there was this important point that I said, domain model structure doesn't specify a physical system, and so the question is, we want to specify a physical system because we're trying to compute physically relevant properties of some model. So how do you do that? Well, and again, what I'm about to say is also just, I mean, essentially all this stuff is, I would say, just well-known, I don't know, it's just, so now I'm going to erase them. So a particularly important two-manifold is the annulus. And the point is that Z of, so for example, we could take A to be equal to an annulus that looks something like, let's see that. Again. So we can take A to be the following annulus. So this one has three domain walls kind of coming in, and one going out, two coming in. And then the point is that Z, this scan vectors mod local relations for this, is a category. And so it ends up, a basis for it ends up looking something like this. So you have, essentially because you have like one string in each segment, and because of the local relations, you can kind of always reduce back to that. And we have like labels here, T U V, H K, and then inside you're gonna have T prime, U prime, T prime, something like that. And so the point is that this is Z of A is a category. Because if you take two such diagrams and the inside labels match the outside labels, you can just glue them together and reduce back to the basis. And you're only, and in this case, the only numbers that you need to do that are this cohomology class, the cohomology classes. So this is a category.
So are the bundles supposed to be dotted?
Sorry?
Are the boundaries supposed to be dotted?
Sure.
And then
so
the labels.
In the paper, we actually have like gray textured background, so like it's kind of easy to see. It's hard to draw. I can't draw.
And what are these labels you're putting at the vertices with dotted lines? Sorry, I forget.
Objects of the module category.
Yeah.
Yep. They're supposed to. So those are things that are on the line, right?
Yeah, they're like this part. This
you mean
part.
The whole little segment is a.
Yeah, the little segment, and then this middle part is going to be different. And then, yeah.
Anything.
Yep. So this forms a category. And then the next definition is of a point defect. So a point defect is a representation. These names are just kind of. These names are somewhat superfluous, and there aren't that many. So, okay, so a point defect is a representation of ZA. So for example, if all of these domain walls were just the identity domain wall, then these point defects parameterize exactly annulins, which is why the name is reasonable, because point defects in 11 when O are exactly annulins. So the name, I think the name makes sense. So a point defect is just a representation of ZA. And then so does everyone know what I mean when
the
I say
point defects would be a category too, right?
Yeah, they form a category. So does everyone know what I mean when I say like a representation of a category? Yeah, exactly. So to each triple of objects you assign a vector space, and to each morphism you assign a linear map, and they have to compose it.
Did you say there's a certain kind of point defect that's an annulon?
Yeah,
so
if all of these domain walls were just the identity domain wall, like you know, nothing. So in this picture, that would correspond to the subgroup being the diagonal subgroup and the cohomology class being the identity, or just being uniform in one. Then this is exactly just the conventional tube algebra, right? And in the case of if you draw this one, it's exactly the Kataev, like the Drimpel double Kataev local observable algebra, whatever. You know.
So part of being a representation means that you're attaching these labels to the graph. You're attaching all this data to your.
No, so a representation is gonna. It's like this is like an algebraic object,
mm-hmm.
And then a representation is just of this algebraic object is just a bunch of vector spaces and linear maps that have the same relation.
Actually, something you take the trivial representation for the graph.
Yeah, but it's.
Or it's like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not always exactly what the trivial representation would be. Because it's not like a group.
Right.
But there is in fact always a trivial representation, but it may not look like what you would expect. Okay. And then
excuse me. If you say a point defect, for example, if you take a Kitaev model on a square lattice,
yeah.
Just remove a site.
Yeah.
Then redefine interaction. Will it automatically give an anion? Yeah.
That'll give you the sum of two anions if you remove a site. So for example, if I have a bubble of vacuum and it's like rough, you would get a sum of one, you get one plus eight. Like that's the point defect that would correspond to. Yeah. Okay. So and then the last definition, so this is the end of the definition. Sorry, wasn't that bad.
So the point defects that live on the domain world should be the fusion category that it should be the module category itself, right?
So the point, yeah. So if you take some domain wall and you can ask about point defects that live on the domain wall,
yes,
that that category is going to be end of the module. So it's going to be some fusion. If the module was semi-simple, it's going to be some fusion category, which is the Merida equivalent to what you started with. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yep.
I guess the ones that end on the boundary, when you, the one where the domain wall ends on the boundary.
Those will be twists.
Yeah.
So. No, it'll be the corresponding module over the center.
So the point defects at the boundary are the fusion category itself, right?
No.
it's a fusion category Merida.
Oh, it is a fusion category Merida equivalent to what you started with.
So it's not the same on the nodes?
I mean, it will be sometimes, yeah. So like, you always have a functor from the center to down to the fusion. So you can't just recover. Like, there's more structure than just being a fusion category. Okay. Sorry, I think I just did a really bad job explaining.
Sorry, wave junction will be a point defect. For example, if we have three domain walls meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are junctions between the domains.
Yeah.
Like a figure of junctions.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Because I was thinking of just a vacancy. Probably that's not.
You can do that with like you can do that if you have like a domain wall to vacuum and like a, you know what I mean? Yeah. Okay. So the last definition, which is just you know, like, not, again, pretty simple. So a compound defect is a domain wall structure. So you have a surface with a bunch of domain walls drawn on it. And a choice point defect for each boundary component. And so each boundary is going to define an annular category. And you just choose a representation of that annular category for each boundary component. Yeah.
And that's an actual physical system now.
That now defines a physical system. And so in particular, if you are so inclined, like I mean from the data that you have in such a thing, you could actually write down an explicit lattice model that realized if you wanted to. And so now we have to so if you take a compound defect, we have to explain what the analog of the Z is, the TQFT. And so now you just take a skein vector away from the boundaries. And then in each, and so this is kind of like probably if anything is new, it's this. So so if you have such a representation, so if you have Z of A acting on Z, then you want to think of vectors in this representation as kind of bimodular trivalent vertices.
Can I just say that the skein vectors are a representation of the category associated to the boundary components?
So you have
a module for that.
And so this thing lives, like this vector, you want to label these vertices with vectors in the corresponding representation. So that makes sense.
So could you say that the skein vectors are a module for the categories ZA? And then you're representing the categories and you're representing the module as well.
Yeah,
The representation of the module would be the hyperspace of states.
It's more than just that though. Because the local relations from one boundary like can interact with the local relations from the other, right? Like so in particular, if you have such a boundary anywhere, like you might have some group labeled line far away, but then you can kind of isotope it close to this vertex and then absorb it in.
That's part of the module structure, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
if you have a general surface, you can always attach an annulus to each boundary component.
Exactly. That's right.
It's a module
It doesn't end up being a module for the tensor product of the algebras. Because the local relations from far away can impact.
That's fine. In module, you can have relations. I mean, if I have a module for the product of two algebras, that's perfectly possible.
This thing doesn't end up being a module for an annular category. All these little labels in a certain area do.
I think if I take the surface, right, I cannot touch an annulus independently in each hole, in each boundary.
Yeah.
So the scale vectors are a module for the category CA.
Not the total scale vectors. Locally, like the labels of pick some boundary component. All the ways that you can fill the boundary component are a module for the annular category.
Why do you need to fill it? No, I'm saying you take the picture, right? You can insert an annulus inside and use relations, you get another picture.
Yeah.
So pictures are a module for the annulus. Well,
pictures about relations are.
No, okay.
Yeah, picture module relations, yes, of course.
So this thing, the scale vector of that is a module for a tensor product of annular categories.
Yes.
But
this
one isn't. And this is the only one.
No, that's right. But I'm saying.
That one is, yes.
That one is
right.
Sorry. And then you pick representations for all the categories.
Yeah, exactly.
You can also look for representation of the module.
Yep.
And that is the data I think you.
There's more structure here. I can't give you like a good counterexample now, but like this thing doesn't have an action of like a tensor product of annular categories. That one does because you haven't filled the holes in. Let me keep going. Let's talk about it afterwards. So essentially what you do is you take a scan vector on that, and then you fill all the holes in with vectors from the representation. But now you can just use the annular action as a local relation as well. That's all. Okay. So again, I'm just going to say scan vectors more local relations. Okay, and so the reason for this name is because, I mean, if you draw a picture, if you're working inside a disk, it literally looks like a bunch of dots connected by lines. That's why. Okay.
Essentially zero.
Oh, okay.
Minus four.
All
right,
well.
That's good.
How
much time do you need?
No, I mean, yeah, so, no, I mean, I don't need any more time. I mean, so kind of like, this is like, I mean, in this paper that we wrote, I mean, this is like the fundamental definition. And then, I mean, essentially what ends up happening is like, let me just say one more. So you might have, you might have some. Wow, did I really talk for an hour and a half?
No.
So like you might have some. So this is a compound defect, then the scan vectors form an annular. They form a representation of the outside annular category, right? And so what ends up happening is. This ends up becoming isomorphic to, so this is like B1, B2.
I think the data was after an hour, everybody once can leave and then the speaker can keep going.
I don't have
So you can get the thing gone for another half an hour.
I think maybe like the official schedule says an hour and a half, but yeah.
We have to keep speakers prisoner here for many hours.
So far I've just like defined like a vector space for you essentially. But the thing is that you can't move these different domain walls, like they're kind of fixed in place. But when you want to start kind of like what you want to be able to do is kind of like fuse these point defects together. And the way that you do this is you have an annular category. There's an annular category on the outside on four domain walls, that acts on this thing, and you just decompose it into some standard models that you have for the four string ones. And so when you do this, you can start computing like anyon fusion and defect twist fusion, and fusing twist anyons into twists and like center associators and like a lot of stuff.
How much can this be automated?
Completely.
You need the fusion category and the bimodule data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you start with the associators of the fusion categories and bimodules, like you can write a mathematical notebook that will just fully compute associated data for the center.
I assume you had to do the homotopies by hand first.
Sorry?
You had to do the homotopies by hand first. I mean, how much is that automated?
Literally everything.
Like 100%.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You just throw in the F symbols and the whatever else, and then it just does everything.
And also you can do like gauging and stuff. Like we've like found like, what was the other one? So there's like a gauging of VEC C3, which is equivalent to VEC S3, which there's no gauging of VEC Z2 that is equivalent to VEC S3. There's a gauging that's equivalent to Ising. Yeah, so you can do like a lot of the stuff that people have been thinking about for a long time, like it's just fully do it, like you can just fully do it numerically.
So there's code attached to the paper where if you provided it.
But that code's not the numerical one though. That's
not the numerical one. There's an exact code where you can hit exact F symbols for VEC G.
Yes.
The one that's attached to the paper is VEC G. It'll just do everything for you if it can run. It might just blow up.
But the reason that was struggling to run is because at that point we were still doing everything symbolically. But now I know how to do everything numerically. So.
How hard is to make everything symmetry enhanced?
Not sure. I don't know. What does that mean?
It either means just replace every vector space by a representation of some auxiliary group, or it means put it on the boundary of a 4D gauge theory.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably hard. Yeah. But I can't say. I can't really say for sure.
You mentioned about this cube number field, square root of 13, and so on.
Yeah.
Is it possible to get a glimpse of this at the level of the spin model, like Lieberman model? What aspect will
nobody's tried?
Probably not. I mean, like, so if you take the Hargrove fusion category and then you construct the Lieberman model from that, you get this bulk that has 12 anions, and the projections onto the certain anion charges, like, there are exact formulas for them in terms of this number field, but like, I mean, if you were trying to simulate this thing numerically, like, you're never going to... Because, like, I mean, we can recompute all of the zooming stuff up to, like, 16 significant
figures. When you look at the Lieberman architecture toricore model, you don't see square root of 30.
No, you don't.
So, obviously, then it emerges, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Hargrove fusion category is significantly more complicated than, like, the FG fusion category.
So instead of putting in Z2, which is what you put in to get toricode out, you put in this Hargrove thing. And then when you ask how... Basically, if you asked how the anions break, you would see square root.
So with Z2, you don't get this?
No.
Okay.
I may add that this number field is really not so bad. Like, maybe in Mathematica, it chokes up when you give it, like, these kinds of numbers, but it's really kind of a low-dimensional vector space on Q. So there are definitely ways of computing
and
that.
Like,
I would consider that a pretty low degree.
It might be worse than that. It might be worse than that.
Examples can keep getting bigger.
Yeah, I mean, it gets hard because you have to end up doing like linear algebra. In Izumi's paper, he gives explicit numbers that show up in half ratings and stuff. And it'll be like degree, some of them will have like minimum polynomial that's degree 8, and the coefficients will be in the billions.
Yeah.
And there'll be like multiple of these numbers. So it's like pretty insane.
If you're interested in top of it.
So, but it thought about the fermionic version of the story?
No, no, but like that's one thing that I at some point want to like start trying to think about. Yeah, but yeah. So there, I mean, there's this paper with Dave Asen and Kevin Walker where like more or less they kind of explain how to do all of this in the fermionic way, using almost identical, like, I mean, they clearly think about it in exactly the same kind of way. They don't do like defects or anything like that. I mean, they do, but they don't like start drawing the defects on surfaces. But like they compute like super centers, and, yeah, stuff like that.
So, does any of this generalize to the chiral case?
No, like not this stuff. Yeah. The reason being is that like you can't like chiral like modular tensor categories that are chiral. They're not centers of an underlying fusion category, and so all of these methods like essentially like if you want to think of the phase as being parametrized by the modular tensor category, like all of these methods only apply, like all of this stuff only applies to ones that are non-chiral, ones that are actually during all centers.
Does anything apply to the non-centered case?
No. I mean, we literally, I mean, when I say like we do stuff computationally, 10% of that, well, let's say 50% of that is just like organizing tube diagrams in the computer and stuff like that. The other 50% is just explicitly computing numerical representations of semi-simple algebras.
So the other 50% works.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, I mean, yeah, you could still like do the tube multiplication on the computer, but